This is KCUR Central Standard. I'm Brian Ellison, and that was the Kansas City Chorale performing the beginning of Mark Hayes' Te Deum. It's one of his major choral and orchestral works. The Kansas City composer has written and had published more than 1,000 pieces of music, from easy church choir anthems to piano solos to new arrangements of old hymns to jazz numbers and to big pieces like that. Joining us to talk about the life of a modern-day composer is Mark Hayes. Welcome, Mark.
Good morning, Ryan.
It's great to have you here.
Thanks so much.
I have to just start with a full disclosure. Some listeners know I'm also a Presbyterian minister, and so I feel a little like I'm meeting church music royalty today. I've typed your name in so many bulletins and sung your music many times, so it's great to meet you.
Thank you so much.
So how did you get into music anyway?
Well, when I was 10 years old, I started piano lessons. I was living in Normal, Illinois. My dad was going to ISU at the time. And the school said, you know, it's when you're in like fourth grade or so, fifth grade, you can take a band instrument if you want. And I had three other siblings, and mom and dad said, you know, we can afford to pay for band instruments or piano lessons. Which one do you want to do?
Okay.
So my sister and I decided to take piano lessons. We did, and that was 10, and I never looked back and just loved doing it. Started playing in church when I was 13, and that kind of got me into that whole scene.
Playing in church seems to be the start of a lot of people's musical stories. Were you as a 13-year-old playing in church?
I was playing for the congregational singing, the hymns.
Really?
There was an offering every week, of course. I'd play a little solo there. If the choir sang, I had to accompany them.
So you were the church pianist.
Yeah, right. And we had an organ as well. And it was not a very good organ, and our organist was not very good. And so I kind of took the lead, and really, I did that all during high school. And actually, I still play at church now.
Wow. You never stop. That's kind of a neat through line in your life story.
Yeah, it is.
I know you went off to college at Baylor. What does one study when one's about to pursue a career in composing music?
Well, I was actually a piano performance major. When I took the test to get in, the entrance exam, you were supposed to be at like a level 5, and I was only at a level 4. Mm. But they let me in anyway, and I worked really hard for the next 4.5 years and graduated with honors. And by the halfway through my degree program there, I figured out, gosh, this is really hard. I don't know that I want to practice 9 hours a day to be a concert pianist with maybe no guarantee that I'll even have a job. And so about halfway through that time, I started getting the idea of maybe I could be an arranger, not even a composer. I had 1 year of composition and thought, I'll never use this.
So arranger meaning you take already written music and put it in something a choir could sing or something a piano could play.
You change it up somehow, make it different. So I did that. And when I graduated, I stayed around Waco, Texas there. There was a Christian publishing company called Word Music that was in that town. And I did some work for them as a music editor and had a little singing group of 7 singers. And I began arranging for them just for fun. Hmm. We got a recording contract from Word. We got to do our first LP and book. And I got published at the age of 24. And that was very different than the conservatory mentality. But by then, I'd kind of let that go and said, I'm going to just see what happens with this whole arranging thing.
I have to think it must have been very exciting the first time someone actually paid you for your music.
It was. I thought, wow, I didn't know I could make a living doing this.
When did it become clear to you that, in fact, you could, that you actually could make a living and not just sell a song here or there?
Oh, it was several years later, because I moved to Kansas City to work for a music publishing company here in 1977, and I was a music editor. So I didn't have a lot of things published then, and certainly wasn't making money from royalties enough to live on. And so maybe flash forward 5, 6, 7 years after that, I did a lot of contract work. People would say, would you write this for us? And it wasn't a royalty-bearing thing. It was kind of a one-time thing, or I'd do a performance and get paid. And slowly but surely, I was able to make a living.
Well, we heard a little bit of one of your biggest works you've mm-hmm. written for chorus and orchestra, Te Deum, at the start of this segment. In fact, let's listen to just a little bit more of that. So tell us more about this piece.
It was commissioned by a Baptist college in Plainview, Texas, Wayland Baptist College. And the guy there had been at Baylor with me and said, I want you to write something more liturgical, something in Latin, something different than just a hymn setting. And so I began researching all kinds of Te Deums written by composers throughout the generations, like Mozart and Berlioz and John Rutter. And then I kind of put all that aside and just took this text, which is a 17-line Latin text that has no rhyme. It's like prose. And I wrote what's called a through-composed anthem. And that's different than a hymn, which is strophic, in that through-composed means you just...
Strophic meaning there's verses.
Yeah, verses. And okay. You can have the same melody to verse 1 as you do to verse 4. Well, in something that's through-composed, it's like writing almost like a stream of consciousness technique. And so if you don't watch out, the musical composition can just wander and sound like measure 1 has nothing to do with measure 100. So you have to figure out how to create themes that go with the text that don't match. And when I did it, I felt pretty good about it. The first performance was not the best at this college, but then I got a chance to premiere it at Carnegie Hall, and that made up for everything.
That's got to be quite a thrill to conduct at Carnegie Hall.
It was. It was my very first time to conduct there, and what was so interesting is it came about through a woman named Dr. Candace Wickey, and she actually was the daughter of my very first boss when I first moved to Kansas City. I knew her when she was called Candy, and she was 16 years old. But now she was working for this incredible company in New York that did concerts and said, we want you to be on Carnegie Hall. And so she helped me make that happen.
So this, of course, is one of those big compositions, but yeah. A lot of what you write are individual songs.
Correct.
How is that different?
Well, for one thing, it doesn't take so much time. Like mm-hmm. I'm working on one today that's due tomorrow, and I can probably write it in a day or two.
No kidding.
Yeah.
And that's you can just say, okay, well, I've got lunch, there's a coffee appointment, and then I need to write a song, and then
that
golf.
That is correct, yes. Last week I wrote the week before last I wrote 4 songs because I was going to be in the recording studio in Indianapolis and had to have them done. They're for like a Broadway-style musical that I'm doing, and the lyrics were already done by someone else. And a couple of songs I took an hour to write each one, and then the orchestration process takes longer. So I respond to deadlines and pretty quick at what I do. And when I get in that zone, that creative mindset, and just go, it's coming through me, it's coming out of me, it usually works.
I think it's always surprising to hear about artists who also, because it's the real world, have deadlines, and sometimes the creative impulse has to be moved along.
Yeah, people say, well, how does creativity happen for you? What is your inspiration is a question I get. And when I give them my flip answer, I just say, it's one word, it's deadlines, and that's what motivates me. But if I had to say just a bit more about it, it really, and not to over-spiritualize this, but I really do believe that all the music in the world is already in the mind of God. And so my job is to be quiet long enough to hear that and let it come out of me with my particular feel or filters or influences.
Well, you mentioned the spirituality of your writing and the influences on you, and a lot of what you write is sacred music or is for church, church choir anthems and such. How would you describe the church music that you tend to write?
It's changed since the 80s. I used to write stuff that had a lot more, it appealed, I would say, to the evangelical church, and now I write music that maybe appeals more to mainline denominations or to more progressive churches theologically, where it's important that we use inclusive language for God and for humanity.
Language that isn't gender-specific.
Correct, correct. I feel like I want people to understand God in a bigger way.
Why that change? Why did you go from writing for sort of one segment of the market to a very different segment?
Just the industry itself has changed. I just found there were more publishers that... Well, for one thing, I got bored writing a certain style of music, and then also my spiritual growth changed as I became more mature spiritually. I felt like I wanted to be the voice of churches that mirrored where my spiritual journey was.
Well, one of the pieces you've written fairly recently, I believe, is called I Will Be That Peace. Let's listen to a little bit of that song. A demo tape of that song. This one you wrote fairly recently?
Yeah. I finished it about 3 weeks ago and just recorded it last week in Indianapolis with some professional singers and musicians.
So typically that will be sung by church choirs?
Yeah, or community choirs, school choirs. It's going to be published through my new publishing company, which is Holmes Street Publishing. So I'm hoping to have that on my website in the next couple weeks. And the main theme of that is from Lao Tzu, the Chinese philosopher from the 6th century. I read this prayer, I heard it in a talk at church, and then I read it online and thought, it's all about I will be that peace. You know, you can just rant and rave about all the stuff that's going on in the world, but unless you start with yourself, it's not going to change. And the second section, which we didn't listen to, I've used the word peace in 20 different foreign languages that are being sung during this song.
How does that song stand as an example, or not, of what you think is sort of the typical or the classic Mark Hayes style?
That has a very pop feel to it for sure, and the middle section is even more. So I do that. I love writing things that are black gospel and soulful and jazzy, but certainly the classical studies that I did at Baylor have influenced me, and so like Te Deum, I would consider that kind of modern classicism. Mm-hmm. So I try to be diverse. One of the things I learned very early on as an arranger is that I needed to be able to do all kinds of styles differently, because you can't make a living just writing country western music, you know, as a choral person or high church. You got to do it all. So I tried to figure out what makes something sound like it should.
You know, I have to say, for someone who, and I don't mean this to be a crass comment, but you specialize in sacred music, you write out of this place of spirituality, but you really do have to think a lot about the market.
Oh, I do. Yeah. I mean, it's very much, I consider myself to be a commercial composer. So I'm making my living at it. And so I need to be aware of, and you know, what people listen to, what they want. I look at what sells and try to, there's always that fine line about me as an artist and what I write because I love this and this is my artist's soul speaking. And then what is going to be marketable? How is it easy enough that a simple choir can sing it? Or because not everybody gets to write for the Kansas City Chorale.
Right. speaking of Kansas City, I mean, has this been a good place for a person in this line of work, or could you literally do it from anywhere?
I suppose I could do it from anywhere. I've lived here almost 40 years, and I love this town. I consider it my home now. I grew up in Illinois, went to college in Texas. But I thought about living in Nashville, which is a center of recording. I thought about living in Los Angeles, which is very much in the entertainment business. And I have Midwestern roots. And I thought, you know, I just want to be in the Midwest. I travel all over the world regularly. And this is a place I can get in and out of. But it's a great place to come home to.
Well, let's take a break. We'll continue our conversation with Mark Hayes. These days, he writes music not only for churches and chorales, but for schools and for jazz singers and recently for the Heartland Men's Chorus. We'll hear about that and more about his life as well when we come back. I'm Brian Ellison, KCUR Central Standard. We'll be right back. It's KCUR Central Standard. I'm Brian Ellison. We're talking with Mark Hayes. He's a Kansas City composer who's published more than 1,000 works, and that was one of them that we're hearing now, one of his sacred pieces, the Agnus Dei from Requiem. He conducted the world premiere of that piece 3 years ago at Lincoln Center, which, like you're conducting at Carnegie Hall, Mark, must have been a very exciting thing to do.
It was. It's great to be in that hall. I mean, both of those halls have amazing acoustics, and I almost prefer Lincoln Center to Carnegie Hall, although they're doing a redo of it. I think it's going to be called David Geffen Hall now.
Yes.
And so I'm eager to conduct there again and see what it's different about it.
Lincoln gets pushed out for the large donor.
Right.
We've been talking a lot about kind of this churchy or this large scale music, but you do write a number of secular pieces.
Oh, I do. Yeah.
Do you approach writing the sacred and the secular differently? You mentioned that you feel like the music, as you said, comes from the mind of God. Is that true for jazz numbers and other pieces?
It is. I mean, I think God is not sacred or secular, you know, God is God, or that energy, whatever you want to call it. And so recently, when I was commissioned by Heartland Men's Chorus to do something, it wasn't particularly spiritual, although Maya Angelou's texts, which I was using, are profound to the max. And so I just thought, I'm bringing my best game, and my best game is connected to that source that's outside of me. So whether it's hip or high church.
Well, let's talk about that piece that was commissioned by the Heartland Men's Chorus. Mm-hmm. It was called I Rise.
Right.
It set the words of poet Maya Angelou to music. KCUR's CJ Janovi actually visited one of their rehearsals when you were there working with the choir on that piece. Let's listen to a little bit of the choir singing from I Rise. How did you come to be commissioned by the Heartland Men's Chorus to write this?
Well, Dustin Cates, who is the director, is a longtime friend of mine. I've known him for years. And I have done other things for Heartland Men's Chorus over the years. I'm just really a big believer in this chorus and what it brings to our community. And so he just said, we want you to do this. And to be able to work with Maya's text was amazing.
Yeah, these are iconic words. Yeah, these are American classics.
Yes.
I would think there's a certain, I don't know, pressure.
Oh, there was. Yeah, there was. And
so how do you cope with that?
Well,
you probably didn't write this one in an hour.
I did not. It took several weeks to kind of figure out, and there was four specific poems. So I wrote it kind of as a song cycle. Each one was a little bit different with a different personality. And when you read her lyrics, they have a poetic meter to them. And so I thought this could be danceable. This could be sassy. This could be sexy. This could be in-your-face attitude. Powerful black woman. And I think the powerful black woman speaks sometimes similarly to a gay man with just, I want to tell you what I've gone through in my life, the struggles I've had, and this is, despite all that, this is who I am.
You know, I was at the Sunday concert when the chorus performed this.
Were you? Okay.
And you were there too.
I was.
You were introduced, and that was the day of the nightclub shootings in Orlando.
Right. Yeah.
I guess this piece was performed. There was a lot of emotion. There was a moment of silence. There was choreography from the Friends of Alvin Ailey.
Mm-hmm.
It was a very powerful experience, at least for me. What was that like for you?
It was for me as well. I was there with my partner Mike, and I was very emotional. There's a part of me that's the musician, the composer, going, I wonder how my music's going to be received. How does it sound to me? Does it live up to my expectations? But I also was going, I'm a part of this community. And, even though I didn't know anybody in Orlando, those are my people, and they were gunned down. And so this is what I can contribute to the world at this moment, to say, I stand with you.
Yeah. Is it hard to compose music knowing that some of the churches that are performing your music would not be affirming of who you are?
Yeah, it is. My journey in the 80s was really tumultuous. Some publishers blacklisted me. Churches canceled concerts when they found out. And I wasn't very open about my sexuality at that point. But as I've grown up and figured out this is who I am, this is who God created me to be, I've realized that that's about them. And that's part of my migration to publishing companies and churches that are more open and accepting. And I know everybody is on the path, you know, where they are. And I try not to be judgmental about that, and know that they're figuring it all out in the time that they have.
I should disclose for our listeners too that my work, apart from my work here at KCUR, is in advocacy work for LGBT people in the church. So I don't want to mislead any listeners about my asking those questions. I want to ask you, Mark, one of the things that you got to do with the Heartland Men's Chorus is work with the choir. You got to stand there. How often do you, as a composer, get to actually stand in front of the choirs that are singing your music and say, this is how I want that to sound?
Actually, quite often. I am out probably 2 to 3 Sundays a month in the fall and the spring, traveling all over the United States, doing what we call composer festivals. So a church or a school or university will bring me in and say, we're going to do these pieces we've agreed upon, in the past, and then you're going to come in and fine-tune them and do a concert. And so that's very fun for me. And I learn, wow, I thought that was going to be so easy to sing, and it's not.
Do you ever change it when you hear them sing?
At that point, usually it's in print, but sometimes make some little slight adaptations in the moment. But it really informs my compositional process. Then when I go back to my office and go, this next piece, I need to be aware of this because it's going to make it easier for them to take in.
Well, we have a little more tape of that time that you spent with Heartland Men's Chorus. We heard the chorus singing in the first clip, but I want to give folks a chance to hear what it sounds like when you were speaking to the chorus and giving them a little feedback on what I think you had just heard them sing for the first time.
Right.
So let's listen to that.
I think the text of this is so amazing. So at page 23 in measure 184, where we have the melody there, it's not done by the soloist. Somehow there needs to be, it needs to sound more conversational, kind of like I'm getting a chance to preach it. You know, but we have, as opposed to being a soloist, we're doing it collectively as a solo voice. Like everybody's, these soloists, but we're all have to be doing it exactly the same.
So if we can, somehow that needs to have a little bit more personality, like I believe in what the lyrics are, and I don't mean by that to sing more loudly, but something, maybe figure out what are the important words in the phrase and kind of go toward them. And confess you heard me crying, and admit you've seen my tears. That's probably the wrong key, but there needs to be a sense, you know, seeing my tears. We've all cried over lots of stuff, and I felt like we were just a bunch of white boys singing that there without not a lot of soul. So, and then, hear the tempo so barely. Can't start that too softly because it's got to build something. And then you are the support for the soloist at that point, and he should just take it and run with it.
That's Mark Hayes working with the Heartland Men's Chorus before they performed his commissioned work, I Rise, with the words of Maya Angelou. Mark, it must be difficult. I think a lot of choir directors rely on a relationship they build over time with choirs. You don't get to build a relationship with the choirs you write for or work with.
I don't. I just kind of come in, and it's all so interesting that usually the conductor of the choir afterwards says, "Wow, I said exactly those same things for weeks and weeks, and they don't hear it, but they did it for you." So there's certain choral techniques that, you know, I can say about any choir. But I try to be very affirming. I think being an encourager is one of my spiritual gifts, and seeing the positive side of people. So I try to have that, my highest self, be, you know, intentional when I go in and work with a choir I've never worked with before and won't see again. And that usually works well.
So, as you said earlier, that's not technically sacred music, but it has sacred qualities to it, the work that you did for the Heartland Men's Chorus. There are some other things that you've composed that are really just completely different. That's My Jim by Mark Hayes. What's the story on that one?
Okay, well, even though I have a partner, that's not about my partner.
Right, I was going to say, I thought his name was Mike.
Yeah. All right. That's actually about my brother-in-law. My sister, Lisa, she and Jim live in Houston, she's my favorite sibling, and she commissioned me to write this piece.
I trust none of the others are listening.
Well. She commissioned me to write this as a gift as his 50th birthday. And I said, how about if I write a love song from you to him? And so she paid for me to go into the studio. I went to Indianapolis a few years back and did this song all about Jim, and just made it real jazzy and fun. There's a clarinet solo in the middle of it, jazzy, because he plays clarinet. And then when he, at his party, which was up somewhere, I think, in Idaho, they played this as a surprise for him. So
that's great. Do you see similarities in the music you write that cut across sort of all of your music, whether it's jazz or modern classical or church choir anthems?
I think, you know, signature things about Mark Hayes would be my use of wide harmonies, and I mean tonal harmonies, not stuff like Schoenberg, but I use a lot of jazz chords, even things that aren't classic, you know, you wouldn't call jazz. Rhythmic changes, syncopation, I alter melodies sometimes, I use modulations. Whenever I first started out writing, I thought, I want to have a surprise in every one of my songs. So when people are listening, they'll go, oh, wow, I didn't expect it to go there. And that was a good thing, not a train wreck kind of surprise. So I try to make things be just a bit different so that when it has Mark Hayes' name on it, I'm going to be proud that it that it does.
So now that I know you're willing to pick a favorite sibling, I don't feel as bad asking you this. What's your favorite thing you've ever written?
Oh, that is hard. As many composers will say, it's like choosing a favorite child.
But you chose a favorite sibling.
I did. So, I did.
Or one of them.
I really love Te Deum. I have a piece I wrote called Rejoice and Sing Out His Praises that I wrote actually for a Shawnee Mission High School many years ago. And I recently conducted it at Carnegie Hall with a new orchestration last May. I love that a lot.
I wonder... You've mentioned that you started your own publishing company along with the publishing companies you work with. Does that suggest that you still have more you want to accomplish in the world of musical composition?
It does.
What's ahead for you?
I want to continue to write some bigger works like I did with Te Deum and my Requiem, but I also want to write pieces kind of like I Will Be That Piece that speak to what the world needs now as far as positivity and kind of a spiritual goal that maybe isn't in bondage to all the religiosity that some of us have grown up with, that maybe says there doesn't have to be so many rules. It can be about I see God in you and I love you and I'm not going to judge you at all and I'm wanting the best for you just like I hope you want the best for me. So I want to write music that says that.
Do composers ever retire?
No, they just decompose. But
I wasn't even going to say that.
I know, but I shouldn't have said that. But I'm pretty much a type A workaholic, and when you work for yourself, it feels like, well, why should I stop doing something that I love doing? So as the future looms ahead, I hope to be writing for a long, long time to come.
Well, that is Mark Hayes. He said that his favorite piece that he's composed is Te Deum, and so we're going to go out by listening to that today, Te Deum, as performed by the Kansas City Chorale. Mark Hayes, it's been really wonderful to talk with you. Thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure, Brian.
You can find our program online. You can even listen to this one again by going to kcur.org/centralstandard. If you're on Twitter, we are too. We're at KCURCST, and I'm at PTS Brian. Follow us. Tomorrow, we'll take a look at the evolution of graphic novels and the history of Kansas Menninger Clinic. KCUR Central Standard is produced by Matthew Long Middleton and Sylvia Maria Gross. Our team includes Suzanne Hogan, Jen Chen, and Andrea Tudhope. Our intern is Anna Sterla. We had help today from CJ Janovy. Gina Kaufman's on leave. I'm Brian Ellison. Thanks for listening. We'll see you tomorrow.